Last week we spoke about beauty, the law of beauty and the path of beauty towards the divine. What we did not speak about was some beauty tips. Of course, we have some wonderful beauty tips in the mother's famous essay, The Four Austerities and Four Liberations, where one of the austerities she speaks about is the tapasya of beauty. And if you read through it, it is really excellent beauty tips, in the sense that even medically these things have been found to be enhancing the health and vigor, strength and fitness. And if you really look at it closely, we see that the secret of beauty is one in balance and harmony. So balance and harmony of the inflow and outgoing energy, the balance and harmony in different parts of a being, the balance and harmony within a collective life, these are all signs of a growing beauty. But just to summarize, in short, in every sphere it means one, wholesome food. Wholesome food means food well cooked, tasty, but not full of all those sharp, pungent things which can excite the palate. The mother says things which are good, healthy, but not for the sake of just getting pleasure out of it. So that's a wonderful food, and containing all the elements which are necessary for health. So this, she says, is with regard to food. It helps in the growing beauty. And nowadays, when we talk about beauty, even physical beauty, though beauty is much more than just physical. We read last time that there are beautiful beings in an ugly body, like Socrates. And we also read that there are faces which are very beautiful, stunningly beautiful, but they may be very dangerous, as we see in Savitri, when we read the kingdoms of the subtle physical. Shobindo reminds us, cautions us, asks us to be vigilant against this kind of beauty, lends its beauty to the terror of the gulfs. That is how he describes. The subtle physical world is a world which creates beautiful forms. That's its strength. And it lends its beauty to the terror of the gulfs, invests with a charm the demon and the snake. So sometimes when we look at a snake, how graceful it is, so long as it is far from us. But when it comes near, its grace and charm changes into fear. I have had these two, both these experiences. Once in an aircraft, of course it was our Air Force aircraft, so I can go into the cockpit and look around. So we saw actually a cobra crossing the runway, those far off fields in northeast, and it was so beautiful with its head raised in dignity. The mother at one place describes like that. But another encounter where in Pune we had that famous man's snake museum, where there was a black king cobra inside a small little glass, and again hood raised, and just to, for the sake of it, or I think for the foolishness of it, I took my hand nearby in maybe a gesture of love or testing or teasing. And within split second, before I could realize, he had already struck at the glass case exactly where my hand would have been if there was no glass barrier. And I literally jumped back and realized what mother has said, that we get hit even at the subtle physical level. So that beauty is much more than about appearances. It's a kind of warmth, sweetness that flows from the psychic. Even this psychic substance can melt into the physical substance and lend it a different kind of a charm, a sweetness right into the very physical. Then she says about sleep, where there is a need for wholesome sleep, which is about 6 to 7 hours a day. And the mother has spoken about it at great length, that how it should be sliced. And it should not be heavy. Especially, it's not good to sleep after very exciting debates and topics. It's much better to calm down the nerves, to take a cup of milk or fruit juice before sleeping. Other ways to just wash the feet in hot water, take a hot shower. These are simple ways to have a good wholesome sleep, which adds to the beauty. And then the third thing, which is very important, which we passingly read, we didn't use the term, but about beauty of thoughts and feelings, which go into what is called in Indian thought as brahmacharya. So Of course, balance between work and exercise, he says, don't overdo and don't underdo. So these are all part of the beauty regime. But the most important is brahmacharya. Brahmacharya is not just sexual control, that's one part of it. But there also one has to be careful. The mother cautions us that it's not enough that physically we are abstaining, but our mind, our thoughts and feelings are dwelling upon it. That can be pretty dangerous, as both modern and ancient psychology knew. But certainly a control of energies, one of the ways by which the energies are drained out is gossip. And we have been reading that again and again, especially when we do negative criticism of others. Actually, when we talk negative criticism of others, we are in a certain sense condemning the divine. Because supposing we make something and someone sees it and says, oh, how horrible it is. So it's not so much about the object, but who takes offense? The person who has made it. So here, of course, the divine doesn't take offense, but when we find faults with people, basically we are telling the divine, oh, you are no good, you didn't do a good job. So poor divine, he takes it, because he keeps telling us, you are all unfinished, we are all unfinished, he is making us, have patience till the new creation when things would become more and more beautiful. But essence of brahmacharya is that we should not waste energy in things which are absolutely meaningless, useless, and of these the most dangerous, of course, is gossip. And when we withhold these energies, and then of course in classical yoga they are also sublimated and offered to the divine, then it lends the true beauty within a human being. It creates, as it were, a hearth of beauty. That's why purity, beauty, they all go together. Even externally, purification is part of beautification. And it applies as much to inner life as to outer life. So that much about beauty. We are just on the doorsteps of the mother's birthday. So how should we really go into her birthday, go to her room for the darshan? And the word that kept coming in my thoughts and mind was gratitude. And I thought we'll read something about that. And just as I had prepared, taken out something from agenda, and I was coming, then Sushil gave me a very good news, which is another cause for gratitude, that we spoke about someone who was kidnapped. Sukant bhai, you are here. So please, so he is the young man who was kidnapped, abducted, please sit, by the Naxals and the dacoits and the bandits. And Mother's grace, we prayed, and of course so many persons prayed, and we are so happy and grateful that you are here. Not only you are back, you are here with us in the Hall of Harmony as a living example of that grace of the divine. So what better way to enter into Mother's birthday than with gratitude? The mother spoke about the 12 petals, and one of them is gratitude. The others being sincerity, humility, perseverance, aspiration, receptivity, progress and courage. So these were 8 attitudes, he said, man should have towards the divine. What about human beings? What attitude should be towards human beings? She said, goodness, goodwill, equanimity and peace. So these are the 4 attitudes with regard to human beings. So out of those 12 petals, 8 are towards the divine and 4 are towards human beings. And the living example of that gratitude is none else but the mother and Sri Aurobindo. I had a very fascinating story of Sri Aurobindo. Directly I heard from someone who was the exceptionally privileged recipient of this grace. He always had this, he had heard that Champaklalji is cleaning Sri Aurobindo's dhoti, and he used to aspire, oh, I wish I could do it. And it's during Sri Aurobindo's time when he was in his physical body. So one day he was just standing near the window and he saw Sri Aurobindo as if he is looking for someone. And he asked if he can come, and Sri Aurobindo gestured he can come. So he came, and Sri Aurobindo said, actually I am looking for Champaklal, because he was not there at that time. And regarding washing of the dhoti, and he said, sir, please, whatever transpired, eventually he got the dhoti, he washed it, and next day he came to return it. So when he came to return it, then Champaklalji was there. So Suddenly, Sri Aurobindo received it, put his hand over this man's shoulder and said, "You know, with this one act, I have washed away all the karmas of your past life." So he was so thrilled that this is the Lord's way of repaying. He went away and Champaklalji started wondering, "I have been doing this for so long and Lord has never said this to me." This thought crossed his mind. And suddenly Sri Aurobindo turns to Champaklalji and says, "And yours too," smiling. It's understood. It reminds me of the famous episode in Ramayana where Kevat, the boatman, is ferrying Lord Rama and Sita across the river Saryu, because they have to go into jungle, Vanvas. They have to abandon the kingdom. And then naturally, all divine beings are always full of gratitude, and Sita wants to give him something. So all that she has is a ring, gold ring. So she says, "I'll give that," because everything else they have kept there. So Rama says, "Okay, you give, you try." So the boatman says, "I cannot take this from you." "Why?" He says, "We are both from the same profession. So cash is not allowed. We can only have a transaction in kind. I mean, like doctors are not supposed to take money from doctors. Of course, most of them take it. That's the sad part. But I have tried it, believe me, but they end up taking it." But those days, I'm talking of the beautiful days of Lord Rama. So he says, "See, you have the same profession as mine, so I can't charge money from you. But yes, we can have repay each other in kind." "So what is it?" He says, "See, I ferry people across this river. You ferry people across the river Styx or Vaitarni, across the Bhavsagar, the river of life. So do one thing, I am ferrying you today across this river, you ferry me across the Bhavsagar." So Lord smiles and says, "All right, so wonderful." So that is how the divine repays the gratitude, how mother would always give a person out of turn appointment, and he could come any time, and he was a very uncouth local chap, and people used to wonder that why mother is so much kind and affectionate towards him. I mean, what has he done to deserve this grace? And when Champaklalji asked mother, "Mother, you are so kind to this man, he is so uncouth, so rough, why are you so much full of compassion for him?" Mother said, no, "Don't say like that. You know, when I came to Pondicherry for the first time, I asked him, where does Sri Aurobindo live? He pointed to his house, lifting his finger, that here he lives. And for that one act, the divine felt gratitude." This is the way. Another story she recounted of, I should not be only losing myself in stories. I'll read the passage, but just one more story of Nalnida. We know that for many years, Nalnida was here, Induleka Di, his wife, she was there. And how a man would help his wife regularly, because many things are required for house running, etc. And Nalnida was here as usual. When somebody asked, even mother asked Nalni, "It seems you are not taking care of your children." His remark was, "Mother, you are there." So that's how Nalnida was. So mother says, "See how he repaid the gratitude. When this man died, nobody would know what has happened. Okay, he has died. But Nalnida came to know about it. He just went inside his room, shut the door, and he went into the inner worlds, traced where his soul is, and took that soul and offered his being at the feet of the Divine Mother." And mother recounts this story that this is how the great of the soul repay gratitude. I mean, it's amazing. We also spoke about that story where somebody had died, and how the mother says that he has fused with Sri Aurobindo's supramental light. Why? He was just filled with the enthusiasm to do Sri Aurobindo's work. That was enough to carry him through the Bhavsagar and make him fuse with the highest supramental light. So this is the power of gratitude. As the mother said, it is the material expression of the psychic being upon earth. Here she says, no criticism at all, none at all. Don't see what shouldn't be, see only what should be. This applies as much to ourselves as to everybody. What should be, we have to see just that and not what shouldn't be. It is a great victory to be won, a great victory. And all the more great and difficult since, and then she says, because of the necessities of the work, I am surrounded only by people who are on the other side. So what is that other side? We often say, I am on the side of the divine. Everybody wants to be on the side of the divine. So who are on the side of the divine? She says, who are on the other side? She says, I don't have around me a single optimist. So the pessimists, the cynics, those who see only darkness, who look at this world and see in it nothing but terror, fear, disintegration, decay, they see nothing but rot, they are on the other side. Whereas the divine wants optimists, willing optimists. All that people tell me, all that they bring to me is always the vision of what should go. Mother, so and so is full of this defect. Mother, I am full of this defect. Mother, this. All the time, what should go? She says, they come and bring me what should go. But the vision of what should be, I have never found it except in Sri Aurobindo. This is the beauty of aspiration. Aspiration is about what should be, not what should go. Divine knows it. But what should be? We read how few people like Janina. Mother says, I am grateful she brought something about the new form in contact with the earth. So what should be? So she says, I found in nobody except Sri Aurobindo. So people would say, but Sri Aurobindo, some places in letters or some places he has written what looks like very sharp. See, this is the difference when we read the written word and when we know the living personality. So the mother reminds us, it's a very beautiful line because it reminds us how we can be misled when we simply read the written word, select few passages here and there, some lines, and then impose it as a general rule. Look what mother says. It's only in sudden gusts, in flashes, now and then. Only when he wrote, never when he spoke, that you could find that sort of sharp thing, of sharp discernment, like in what we translated the other day. Otherwise, when he spoke, when he was with people, there was never a negative criticism. Mother uses the word never. How much love and compassion for everybody Sri Aurobindo had. I mean, we know that story of that thief who would steal and money would disappear from the room. And one day these three, I think it was Bijoy, Suresh and Nalnida, if I am not mistaken, definitely Bijoy and Suresh Chakravarti and one more, was it Amrita or Nalnida? I think it was Nalnida. Anyways, they are waiting for to catch who is stealing the money. So they see the milkman coming, looking here and there, nobody is around, pulling the drawer, taking out 5 rupees. 5 rupees in those days. Shutting the drawer, putting it in his cap, putting the cap here, adjusting it, and very happily, what a smart way. And all the three pounce upon him. They have caught the thief, stealing from the Lord's chambers. How dare he do it? Not realizing that Lord keeps two thieves by his side when he's ascending in his avatar as Christ. Sri Aurobindo writes, two thieves slain by his side mock at his death. So the Lord has some kind of special feeling for thieves. As Krishna avatar also, he seems to have collected some thieves around and stolen things from Matki. So they are about to catch him and present before the Lord. Suddenly they see that Sri Aurobindo, who would normally be inside absorbed in his meditation, comes out and stands on the threshold. And they looked at Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo uttered only one sentence and went back. Let the boy go, and went back. And they say, we felt we are the thieves, we are the criminals, we are the bad people. And not that man who has been stealing for so long. How for that other person who was throwing stones at Sri Aurobindo's house, he couldn't succeed but within 25 meters. And when he's on the deathbed and his wife comes and pleads, Sri Aurobindo says, what? Death for a few stones? So the mother reminds us that Sri Aurobindo never had a negative criticism for anyone. It is only when he spoke that too for those who could accept it with that kind of grace and dignity and beauty and surrender that yes, the Lord is saying to us to help us in our journey. So the mother reminds us, otherwise when he spoke, when he was with people, there was never a negative criticism. From my earliest childhood, it's her birth, so something about her memory. When I was 5, my memory is at 5. And for more than 80 years, so from 5 till 80, because this talk is 1963, I have always been surrounded with people who brought me an abundance of revolt, discontent, and then more and more so cases. Certain cases have been very acute and still are of sheer ingratitude. In fact, when we read that prayer of the mother in 1931, when she fell seriously ill and her coming out was stopped, and one place where Sri Aurobindo is reported to have remarked under his breath, "Brutes." Because there used to be the soup distribution where mother would pour her very physical substance into it and people would drink it. And someone had the audacity and the stupidity to remark, "But this is unhygienic." Mother would taste it and then pass it around. And then she fell seriously ill. She took all that upon herself, and Sri Aurobindo stopped completely at that time. For a long time, mother did not step out and mix freely and passingly. And that is the time we find this prayer of the mother. She has plunged herself into the very abysses. And there she says, faith is spent. Gratitude is not born. Forget about vanishing. It is not yet born. So she says, sheer ingratitude. Not towards me, she's not talking of herself, look at the impersonality of the divine. That doesn't matter at all, towards the divine. Now when we speak about gratitude towards the divine, we immediately feel, oh, what has the divine done for us in terms of physical things. But gratitude recognizes the divine hand in everything. So beautifully she says that we should be grateful for all the ordeals, because they are the shortest way to lead us towards the divine. We have that interesting dream dialogue, I would say, not an imaginary conversation, of Nirodha with Sri Aurobindo while in the playground. It is a dream dialogue, it's not an imaginary conversation, though it is presented like that sometimes. And how beautifully Sri Aurobindo speaks about that, how human nature and how things tilt the balance, how the divine deals with those whom he loves, sometimes giving them difficulties. And he gives the example of Pandavas and Draupadi, and how they were always full of gratitude. They never complained, they were not bitter. I mean, if anybody had right to be really bitter, it should have been Pandavas and Draupadi and Lord Rama himself. But how they were always full of gratitude. But not the divine. Ingratitude, that is something I have often found very, very painful, that it should exist. It is one of the things I have seen in my life that seemed to me the most intolerable. So what is ingratitude? Gratitude, of course, we know, but what is ingratitude? She says that sort of acid bitterness against the divine, because things are as they are. It's like, why you made this world the way it is? It's horrible, it's terrible, it's full of... It's absolutely... I mean, if we look at it from the other side of the story, that the divine is pulling this world out of its inertia and inconscience. Billions of years, seers, prophets, sages, avatars, despite humanity dealing with them so mercilessly, brutally, putting on the cross, beheading, burning, in spite of all that, the divine pouring his love to pull this dark out of darkness. If we look at it from that angle, there will be nothing but gratitude. But if we look at what has been realized till now and we look at the darkness around, then we begin to become bitter and complain. So she says, because of things the way they are. this sort of bitterness against the divine, because all that suffering was permitted. We are not able to see that this is part, it's only to make our journey faster. We want to go faster. So divine says, all right, I'll help you go faster. So it takes us through the shortcut. Now shortcut is bumps. So we say, why are you taking me through this? She gave the example of the boy whose father was a big hindrance to his renouncing everything and going towards the divine. So he would pray to the divine that this is my one problem and he is my big hindrance. So this father fell seriously ill. Story mother recounts. So when he fell seriously ill, this boy started praying, I pray to you, I believe in you. Why have you made my father so ill? So mother says, then again the father recovered and again he started cursing. So she says, this is how human nature is, that we want one thing, then we want another. And in that seesaw, life is spent, as some mystic poet in Urdu has said, that we brought with us only 4 days to live and err. And 2 were spent in wishing, and 2 were spent in waiting for the wish fulfillment. Do arzu mein chale gaye, do intezaar mein. Do arzu mein kat gaye, do intezaar mein. That's because we desire for the wrong things, and then when divine doesn't give them to us or denies them to us, we are still waiting. He is actually coming and giving himself. So here we have this, that ingratitude. It takes on more or less ignorant, more or less intellectual forms, but it's a kind of bitterness. And not only that, very beautifully at one place he says, when we are bitter inside, our consciousness tastes bitter to the divine. So when I read it, it was like an eye-opener for me. Because of one thing which I don't like to eat is Karela. Because I believe, you know, bitter fruits are not holy, not sattvic. This is justification. It's very good for diabetes. At least we believed it. Now we don't know. Mother has given it the name sweetness, because if you once taste Karela, after that everything else tastes sweet. Even neem will taste sweet once you have tasted bitter gourd. But so, you know, it as if purifies our system, makes everything look good. But when I read this, I thought, oh, if ever I go and complain and say, Mother, I am full of this bitterness towards anything, that means I am tasting like Karela to the Mother. No, I don't want to taste like this. So beautiful that when we are bitter inside, our consciousness tastes bitter to the Divine. So like Prasad has to be sweet, it should not be bitter. It takes sometimes personal forms, which makes the struggle even more difficult. So personal, impersonal form is why there is suffering in the world. And divine is responsible for it. Why there is suffering is a valid question. But when we blame the divine and say, you made this, it's so horrible, so terrible. But personal form, why my life? Why me? You have, as if everybody believes he has been marked out, singled out for suffering. And we forget so many things which divine has given to us to start with: this body, this breath, feelings, thoughts. These are means of ascension towards the divine, and above all soul. And even with that he was not satisfied. He put himself within this body. He has made this tenement of flesh his own, his measure in our human measure cast, so that we too may to his divine measure rise. So this is what he has done. Sacrificed himself to become like us. It's man's ignorant consciousness which makes it personal, but it isn't. It's all terrestrial attitude. So it's not that we have been singled out. It's there in terrestrial nature. Suffering comes to everybody. Sri Aurobindo says blows come to all. Not because you have done something bad, but because the nature of earth life, that we are attached to things which are transitory, and when they are taken away, we suffer. It's not because somebody has done sin or karma or past life. So she says it's terrestrial. But we make it personal. We think divine has chosen us. And sometimes we do much worse by saying, divine will punish that person. How horrible our conception of the divine would be. If divine were to punish, none of us would be sitting here. He only gives light and love and changes things. So she says it came with the mind. Animals don't have that. And that's why I feel a sweetness in animals, even the supposedly most ferocious, which doesn't exist in man. And yet, of all movements, the one that gives perhaps the most joy, an unalloyed joy, unattained by that egoism, is spontaneous gratitude. For what? Because we woke up in the morning, because the birds were singing, the sky is blue, lovely color in the sky, last 2 days, there was rain today. So we can look at it like this, oh, it rained. Or we can look at it like this, I wish it rained for all the 7 days. But it rained today, it's so nice, pleasant in February, everything. We can be full of gratitude. She says, for a spontaneous act in a human being, we can be full of gratitude. It is something very special. It isn't love. It isn't self-offering. It's a very full joy. Very full. It is a very special vibration, unlike anything other than itself. It is something that widens you, that fills you, that is so fervent. So if you want to widen, one of the simplest ways is gratitude. And when we are grateful, we widen. Then we begin to understand. Because then we see the dark side of life as not as darkness, but as good in the making. Evil is good in the making. And that widens us. Otherwise, become more and more narrow and shrink and collapse around the ego. It is certainly, of all the movements within the reach of human consciousness, the one that draws you the most out of your ego. So we want to be free of the ego. So there are so many ways, love, self-giving, etc., etc. But she says the one which is most powerful is gratitude. So every day we can simply be grateful that I have yet another day to be, to live. Imagination, we can be grateful if there is no real thing, imagination. Oscar Wilde, how he used to imagine? Somebody came to him in the afternoon and asked him, what have you dreamt? What did you do today? He said, oh, I went to this place, that place, it was so wonderful and this, that. So his wife, who was knitting the sweater, he says, after a while she couldn't take it. He said, have you gone off your head? None of these things you did, you were sitting at home, and now to your friends you are telling all these things and feeling so happy. He says, oh dear, you don't understand the power of imagination that helps so much, especially when I am in your company. That of course was his typical way of his remark. But one can be grateful that even in a prison one can imagine such beautiful things. He was also put in prison, incidentally, toward the end of his life or middle life, I forget. So how people in prison, they have come out with such beautiful things, and they've been grateful that, okay, you have cut me off from others and now I can really meditate upon you. Sri Aurobindo himself, when we read tales of prison life, it is so sweet. It fills us with nectar and joy. One cannot imagine that he was going through those ordeals. Even that he turns into a means of joy. You know, first touch of Sri Aurobindo's humor when he describes how he had that omnipotent bowl with him, which was used for everything, and the blanket, and how he makes fun of the most difficult hardships that one can imagine. And when he is allowed to take a little walk, how he talks about the little grace that was granted and he was allowed to walk. So we have this beautiful line that it takes us out of the ego. And when it can be a gratitude without motive, that vibration, the vibration of what exists towards the cause of existence, then a great many barriers vanish instantly. In one of the places he says, every morning what we should do? We get up with a load full of worry. He says, concentrate for a few moments on gratitude and trust. Why grateful? What has happened? Nothing has happened today, mother. Gratitude that the divine exists. Gratitude that you exist. Gratitude that you can unite with the divine in this very life. Gratitude that you are given yet another chance to overcome our follies. She says, if you do that, then she says that many, many veils get torn. And the progress is very swift. It's a practical advice mother has given, that every morning when we get up, concentrate. And then that concentration will help create conditions for health, will fill us with light and peace, and our understanding will become better, love will become sweeter, those whom we want to help, we are able to help better just because of this power of gratitude. And she says, just in the morning, few minutes, if we can have that. When you can enter that vibration in its purity, you realize immediately that it has the same quality as the vibration of love. It is directionless. It isn't something going from one thing to another. It doesn't go from here to there. It is simultaneous and total. So, even when love seems to be going from one to another, it radiates. It's an energy that fills the being with sweetness. So, gratitude is something which fills our being with the purity and sweetness. It exists in itself for its own delight of being. And what I am saying spoils it a lot. We see that play of the mother written, I think 1911 or something around that, where she speaks of the hall of truth, where different gods are coming, and towards the end, a very shy little goddess comes and nobody recognizes her. They say, who are you? You look so modest. You're not even dressed like a god. And she says very timid, very shyly, my name is Gratitude. And suddenly you feel gratitude is the peak of things, without which all this assembly would be incomplete. Men have repeated ad nauseam that nothing exists without these two poles. So always there has to be some reason for gratitude. No. This is, it exists. It's a vibration. Some people carry it. Like love, it exists. It doesn't need necessarily that one must have a cause or calculate or think and some object, then only there would be love. No, love, gratitude, these are for their own sake. But that's not the way it is. This means that man in his ordinary outward consciousness cannot understand anything. There we are. This is that we know. Of course, mother knows what we are. But in its essence, ultimately, gratitude is only a very slightly colored view of the essential vibration of love. It is only when there is love, there is gratitude. What a beautiful poet, Bhule Shah. We spoke last time about Maulana Rumi. So Bhule Shah has reason to be grateful towards the divine. What does he say? He says he must be going through a very difficult period in his life when he felt divine is cutting every prop. So he says, you are dancing over my head with a sword and I am rejoicing. As you cut every bit of my body, all that I say, oh my sweet beloved, I am so grateful, I am so grateful. This was the Teri Talwar Ke Niche Nachiyan Karke Chaiya Chaiya, which was distorted in one of the movie and made Thaiya Thaiya dance. But it originally is a beautiful kalam from Bhule Shah, that I am dancing below the sword, and with your sword you are removing bits and parts of my body and my being. It's actually shedding of the ego. But every time you do it, with every drop of blood, I simply feel more and more joy, more and more gratitude. And I tell you, oh my sweet beloved, dance more, karke chaiya, 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 chaiya. That's how it is. So we stop here on the threshold of mother's birthday. We go to her with a heart full of gratitude.